Blog Talk Radio.
All around me are familiar faces.
Welcome to the Writing Mama Show. This is your host, Virginia S. Grenier. And today we have a special guest with us. It's Hadiya Carlisle. She is going to be talking about her book, Torch in the Dark. But before I get into all of that, I just really quickly want to go over what we have going on here at the World of Ink Network. Tomorrow we have... Hold on, my screen is like taking a while to pull up. We have, I think it's a good story. Hold on. Yeah, a good story is Marcia Casper Cook. She is going to be on at 3 p.m. Eastern time. She's going to be welcoming a couple of different authors. Elizabeth Black and Karen Vogon will be on there. And I think Marnie McNiff is also going to be joining on that show to talk a little bit about social media marketing and how to handle that kind of end of the business. So that will be a good show. Again, that's a good story, and that is at 3 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, which is Tuesday. And then this Wednesday is our once a month show with R. Jeffries, The Right Step, and he will have on his show the editor-in-chief of Author Magazine, which is William Kinoner, and it looks like they'll be discussing the writing process and some of the different things you can do, such as like writing excellent essays and stuff like that to get your name out there and in front of the public. And then I don't think Fran Lewis has a show this coming Thursday. That may change in the next 24 to 48 hours, but right now it doesn't look like we have on Thursday a book discussion with Fran Lewis. So, but that's what we have lined up at least for this week on the World of Ink Network for right now. Really quickly, just to kind of give you a rundown of who our guest is. I have to scroll down to that. Okay, so Hadiya Carlisle, she has written her memoir called A Torch in the Darkness. And she basically, it's about being a single mother haunted by memories from her own traumatic childhood and being a pioneer as one of the first women since World War II entering into the trade of being a welder. So we want to welcome Hadiya to the show. How are you doing today?
Oh, fine. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Obviously you went from being a welder to memoir writer. So how did that transition happen? Because you actually, you went and took classes to learn how to write your memoir. So can you kind of talk about how you decided to, when you retired from welding, to go into actually sharing what you experienced and the journey you've taken personally?
I worked after welding for many years. I worked for the city of New York in economic development, and I've had jobs. I never decided exactly to write my memoir. It came through the back door. I took a lot of writing classes, free writing with Natalie Goldberg, who is known for her free writing. And I just started writing little pieces, and then I realized I had a lot of material. And then I took a memoir class at the University of Washington here in Seattle and started working seriously at it. But I had written for about 15, 20 years before that.
Have you had anything else published, like any articles or short stories or anything like that before?
Yeah, I've had some poems and small little things published in anthologies.
So what inspired you to decide to actually write your memoir and share this experience with the world?
Well, and now that I'm older, it became really apparent that I wanted to tell this story. It's quite a story, and it's also a story of the 60s, of being very involved in that time of our history. And it just felt, but I had to have that distance. I was much older when I decided that, you know, to do it. You know, I don't think I could have thought about that in the 60s when I was going through it.
Yeah, we just had recently had Jack Remick out here in St. George, Utah. He just on Saturday did a writing boot camp with a lot of the writers out here. And I had the pleasure of going out to dinner with him and his wife Friday night before the workshop. And we were talking about your book. And that was one of the things that Jack said is, you know, with everything that's in your memoir, you definitely really embraced what it was like during the 60s and early 70s and what that era was like. And a lot of the questions and choices people had to face and make, you know, and decide on because of what was happening, you know, from, you know, you had the Vietnam War going on, you had, you know, just a recession, you know, we had that a really bad recession during within that time frame as well that hit, because I was born in 75. Now all my listeners know exactly how old I am, but I remember my parents as I got older always talking about, you know, that when I came along they were really concerned because we were just digging ourselves out of that recession, and here they were, you know, a young kid. And so, I mean, Jack was really impressed with your writing, and I told him I was too, because the beginning of the book does incorporate a lot of that, which I don't think a lot of, at least, you know, I don't want to say everybody from my genre, but a lot of kids from my generation, I don't think, even though we were born during that time frame, really understood what it was like growing up during that time. So do you mind sharing a little bit about the beginning of your book and what it was like growing, you know, being a part of the 60s and a lot of the civil rights movements and, you know, just, you know, a lot of things that were going on, because, I mean, you were involved with all the union stuff that was happening. I mean, there was just a lot of different things politically that were going on during that era.
Sure. Well, first, I have to say, I came out of the 50s, which was, that came out of World War II, and mm-hmm. everybody had tried to be very, quote, American. You know, the whole goal was for women to be housewives and to not work and to have dishwashers and washing machines. And that's the era I grew up in. But underneath it, there was this real rumble of, you know, coming out of World War II. So I rebelled, and I didn't fit into that world. So the 60s gave me a whole out. I had a more unusual, but a lot of people were quite distressed, wanted out of that rigid 50s. But I wound up in a mental hospital. But because of the 60s, I could become, quote, a hippie and rebel. And it was safe there. It was very safe to be different. And then I had my son. I kept him, which was unheard of in those times, to be a single parent, you know, by from the beginning. I mean, it happened to a lot of people. But they didn't want it. But to actually keep him and not put him up for adoption was very unusual. But it was because of the 60s and that whole era where we were wanting something different and talking about freedom. It gave me the freedom. I was also very blessed to have in my life people that really supported me and helped me get through that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know, Ash, you know, you definitely had either the real traditional hold on to the American, you know, like you're saying, 50s dream, and then there was, you know, that Ash, you know, very kind of, you know, rebellious hippie kind of movement happening. And I remember my mom, because my mom was born, I think it was 53, 52 is when she was born. And I remember her telling me when she was in high school, they actually had classes for the girls on how to cook and be a good, basically stay-at-home
mom. Oh, yeah, we
mom
had that.
And housewife. And
oh, yeah,
like,
we had all that.
Are you kidding me?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
oh my God.
And we all had that.
Which
I never,
so
I ran away from that. I
never yeah, my fitted mom, in. My mom actually pulled out her memory box and was showing me like this packet that they got in high school that, you know, basically outlined, and, you know, there it was, you know, the 50s, you know, sketch of the Modern Housewife. I'm like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, oh, because, you know, I always kind of, you know, wondered what it would be like. So, it, you know, reading your book really helped me because, you know, my mom, you know, came from a very traditional value, you know, setting, and she rebelled a little bit, but not too much. So reading your memoir gave me a better understanding of her sister who really, really rebelled and was more involved into the, you know, that kind of, you know, I guess, they, you know, that out of the box thinking like, oh my gosh, you're an extremist in your viewpoints. And it wasn't. It was just, you know, exactly what you're saying. You know, everybody just needed a break from a lot of what the stereotypes and traditions that were, you know, being put upon. And talking about,
we believed it, and I still do. We believed in, you know, the equality, things that we're still fighting about today, the civil rights. I mean, you have to go back where blacks, there was no opportunity. So it felt just very real that we have, you know, people have those opportunities.
Yeah, no, and that makes sense. You're right. I mean, we're still obviously as a country, because we are still such a baby as a country. I mean, I was just talking to somebody recently, you know, that they were shocked because I'm going to be with an author during the summer, who's gay, and we're going to be talking about his memoir, you know, and dealing with that whole, you know, what's happening with that whole, you know, group of people. And someone looked at me like, well, aren't we kind of past that? I'm like, are you kidding? I said, people in the U.S. still freak out when they see black and white people marry. I said, we're not past that. We're not like the U.K. We're going to be like, oh, that's totally socially acceptable. I said, we are such a baby as a country. I said, in some areas, we're okay with some stuff. You're right. But in other, you're right. There's still things we're fine. I mean, I remember when the glass ceiling broke for women to become CEOs in business. I mean, I'm not that old, but I was in the workforce when that finally started happening, where more women were becoming CEOs of company, which was like, oh my gosh, you know, to become an exec or a CEO of a company was so unheard of, even in the 80s. So you're right, we are, you know, that equality thing is still something that we're striving for. But as a single mom, and I can totally relate to this, and that was one of the biggest things I was able to relate with a lot in your book, is my oldest son I had as a single parent. I left, you know, his dad and I broke off before he was even born. I was eight months pregnant with him when I was on my own and, you know, getting ready to have this child. And his biological father's never been in the picture at all since we broke off when I was eight and a half months pregnant with him. And when I was reading your memoir, I was really impressed with your strength, because I remember what it was like making that decision in the mid-90s. Because my son was born in 96. And that was a hard enough, you know, being in I was in college, you know, my early years of college, deciding to, you know, to break ties off with his father, to raise this child on my own, to get my college degree. I was so close. I'd only been out of high school 4 years, so I keep thinking high school. I was only my freshman year of college when I got pregnant with my son. So I had 3 more years of college ahead of me. I had to decide, you know, how long am I going to take off from college before I go back? You know, I had to get a job. I had a job, but, you know, I was only part-time. I had to find a full-time job to support him. And that was scary enough, living in San Diego in the 90s, making that decision. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, my gosh, here you are in a time where it's even – and people looked at me like I was crazy then anyways. My mom...
In my time it was completely unheard of, completely.
Yeah.
The only choice was adoption. I don't even know if we had abortions then. It was really just adoption. And it was just unheard of. And I also, in the 70s, I lived in Bellingham, this small town, and I bought a house by myself. And that was unheard of, single woman to buy a house.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just the courage to do that just is amazing.
I don't know where it came from. It just came out of me. I didn't even know I had or didn't even think about it. I just put one foot in front of the other. I didn't really think of, you know, these things.
I
have to live someplace, and I was tired of renting, and I had, you know, money for the down payment, so...
No, it makes sense because, you know, I think about, because my mom actually did try to convince me when I split ties with my son's biological father. She's like, you should think about putting him up for adoption, you know, and my mom.
I couldn't go through it.
I couldn't either. I looked at her, and it's funny because she loves my son. I mean, she looks at me now like, I don't know what we do without him in our lives. You know, now I'm married now and I have additional kids. But, you know, I remember my mom, I'm like, are you serious? How could you take something that's growing inside you and just give them away? So, I mean, especially like you're saying, in your time frame, it was so unheard of, and to have a support group is harder, I think, back then. So was there anybody that you feel really stuck out to help be an inspiration to you during that time?
Well, I had a lot of issues, and then this therapist, Ned, who passed away many years ago, really supported me. He didn't want me to keep Reuven, my son, but once I did, he really supported. And then I had this friend, Katie, that really helped raise him also. He went to live with her for a year or two. I didn't really have him because I had a lot of problems until he was about 5 years old. So, and it be, but it was because of that 60s. It would have been unheard of in the 50s. Because of the 60s, there was a whole thing about peace and love and support. And you know, so people extended themselves that wouldn't have happened in another generation.
Yeah, yeah, no, it makes sense. Now, I'd love
to
talk about
more
how you...
And we lived more communally, not totally, but somewhat. I did live communally.
Yeah, 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 it was a little bit more of a, in a lot of different, you know, groups. It does, yeah, that's true. There was a little bit more of that communal kind of group effort, and I know my mom had that when she was raising me, because my parents divorced when I was young, and we lived in an area that it was like that. There was a lot of single moms that relied on each other during the late 70s with their children, so they could work and get stuff going. So now, but what led you to go into welding? I mean, I know I read your memoir, but you know, obviously, it's always great to hear it from the actual, you know, author's mouth. That how did you fall into welding? Because I mean, a lot of people think, wow, you know, I mean, here you are, you're a single mom, you know, you're in the 60s, you know, early 70 era, you know, all this stuff's going on, and she's welding on top of all of this. Like, how did that happen?
Well, I talk about it in my memoir. It was totally unconscious to make that decision. I really had no idea. And it goes back to my childhood traumas. And there was something about the shipyard, the darkness, and then holding the torch, having power when I didn't have power as a kid. But I fell in love with welding. I actually did. Just the sparks and just the rhythm of welding every day. And something just from down deep spurred me on. I found out about it when I worked in the Navy shipyard just as a tool room person, and that was also because of the 60s. I got hired because of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Before, they never even had a woman there. And I also needed to get away from anything traditional. You know, I was a single mother, you know, that... For jobs, I mean, I was trained somewhat as a social worker, but boy, they wouldn't let me if they knew my background of being a mother, a single mother. And this time, that's how outdated, you know, now it's a whole different world, of course. But then I was looking for something else, but it really relates back to my background, and I was just drawn to it, and I did fall in love with it.
Yeah, my
husband, and I also had to fight through the men a lot. It was unheard of.
And
they were forced
still,
to take me at times, you know, but they got used to it.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's more women welders now than there was, obviously, when you were.
Not a lot.
Cause you're
not a lot.
But there's still not a lot, because I was going to say, my husband just recently took a welding class, because his grandfather used to weld, and he passed away, and so my husband wanted, you know, us to have all of that stuff, and so he took a course out in our area to learn how to weld, and I'm like, so were there any women in your class? You know, because I took wood shop. I like working with wood. I absolutely love it. And I know how to use all the different saws and stuff. And my husband's like, nope, all guys. And I'm just like, so then and it was like, you know, this was last year. So when your book came across, I'm like, look, honey, there's a book about the woman. You want to read her memoir? Because, you know, I was like, because you're right, there's still not very many, you know, women that are in that business. It definitely is male dominated. What was that like? Working with so many men, I mean, especially as a woman, I mean, and a lot of things and traumas that you went through, I mean, you must have had your guard up a lot.
Yeah, you know, it was constant, and I was used to it, but it really, you know, it was, after a while, after many years, I couldn't take it anymore. When I first got there, they knew that I was coming, but they didn't put any, the men had bathrooms right by the ships. Mine was I had to walk a mile to the administrative offices to use the bathroom. And of course, I came in dirty, and the secretaries also, you know, used that administrative one and complained that I was dirty. But you know, it never dawned on them to put up a out, you know, those boxes by the ship.
Yeah.
And so everything I had to fight through everything, and I worked in a small town, and the men that worked there were from a very background that. It was beyond them. So they, you know, and parts of it was okay. They just joked with me, and they, some of them helped me, but some were really awful. And one day one man came up to me, and he just was so mad, and he said, "Go home, lady, where you belong." You know, I don't know exactly what he said, but this was funny. Our boss had painted, there's leads, there's, they call them leads, that go from the machine to the ship. Each one has, it's a wire. And we were getting them all confused. So my boss painted everybody's different, and he gave this one guy a pink one. So he, this guy would never talk to me, and he came up to me one day, and he said, "Would you change with me?" Because I had, I don't remember what color I had, blue or something. He couldn't stand having a pink wire lead. I mean, there's, you know, these kind of funny stories, but but also I had never been very good with my hand. I mean, I come from a background where women didn't help out in the house, in it with the, that was man's work to help fix things. So, you know, I had to learn a lot. It was, you know, not easy from that point of view. But there were a lot of constant jokes, constant sexual innuendos, constant.
Yeah,
and there was, I didn't, there were no other women there, so there's no way to even give each other, you know, somebody to get support from.
Yeah. Did you ever at any time ever feel, you know, your personal safety was ever in a threatening or dangerous situation? I mean, besides just welding and doing that kind of work, which is, you know, a very labor-intensive, you know, work, I mean, again, it sometimes, I mean, and maybe it's just me, but I mean, at least from what I've experienced when I've lived in like cities and I've watched a lot of the, I'm not saying all construction guys are this way, but some of them, I remember being in downtown LA a few times and walking to the fashion district when I used to be a buyer in fashion, and they'd be have construction going on, and there's just some guys that I would purposely take the longer routes. I didn't have to take the back, you know, alley to go wherever, because I was just like, you know what, they just, My hair is standing up on end. And I mean, here you are, a woman where, I mean, you know, I just, did you ever feel like that there was there ever a time with around any of those guys that you were a little leery or worried about your personal safety at all?
Well, I had gotten to the shipyard because some of the guys I went to welding school were working there. We had gone to school in California, but then they were up in Washington, and they were respected. So I don't think there was ever any chance that anything would really happen. It's just that they like to talk big. They would make innuendos all the time.
Yeah,
I told a story in my book, the union rep always bugging me to meet him later, to have sex with him, and I for years, I mean, this is not just a month, this is years, and I kept saying no. And then one time I was so mad at him, I said, "All right, you show at my house 8 o'clock tonight." They all knew where I lived. "You show," and I was serious. I was, "All right, if this is what I have to do, I'm going to do." Of course, he never showed up, and he never bothered me again. And I said, "Why didn't I think of this years ago? I had to listen to him for years."
Yeah, you called him on the
call. Oh, I called his
Yeah, wow. What changes have you seen in welding from when you started to when you left? I mean, have there been significant changes? I mean, because I know you were very involved
I'm not
with
in
a
touch
lot of
with the field, but I did go to the shipyard where I used to work. It's still there, but different management. And we have helmets that you have to wear, and they showed me, and it's completely been modernized, and I was so surprised. It was very different than what I had used. I had a hood where you flipped up the stuff when you welded, you put it down. When you're not welding, to chip the metal, you flipped it up, and now it's all one piece. I'm not sure exactly how it works. So things have really changed. And they did have one woman there, and they introduced me to her, and they were very nice to her and said, oh, you know. I mean, and she could get, and, you know, we're small, so we can get into smaller spaces, so they were very grateful for her. And I did that at the shipyard, too. I got into small spaces. But I don't know how much it changed. I'm not in touch with it, but I know on some level it has.
That's good. Now, you have been going out and speaking and talking to people. What's one of the biggest messages that you've been asked to pretty much talk to groups of people about when you've been out, you know, talking about your book and just your experiences?
I think people are just interested in, you know, the 60s and my journey, from what I can tell. I'm going Wednesday to talk to a senior center, and I've never done that, and we're all of the same age, so it'll be interesting, but I think most of them did not have any kind of experience I did, so it'll be very interesting from their perspective what happened in the 60s.
Yeah, I bet. It sounds like you've talked to more of the younger generations. Have any of them asked you, like a really interesting question that you just didn't expect at all, that you're like, wow? Or no?
Not that I remember.
Do you?
But I think that just hearing the process that, you know, it's what they take for granted. But that's with every generation. You know, this generation... Mm-hmm. Our kids' generation can't conceive of life without cell phones and iPads.
Oh, I know. My daughter just the other day walked up to me because she found one of my old cassette tapes for music. And she's like, Mom, what is this? It's a cassette tape. I'm sure what a cassette tape is. I'm realizing she has no clue because when she came around, I mean, things were starting to transition from the CDs to iTunes. I know, and I think back, you know, because I remember the very first computer. I was a kid when Macintosh, you know, hit with, you know, home PCs and Apple computers, and I'm thinking, wow, that's true. My kids, you know, they've never known a life without that. So, and I think about my mom telling me, you know, she grew up listening to the radio. They didn't have, I don't think they had an actual TV until she was in junior high or something. In her house. So.
Yeah, I remember when the first TV came. We were in high school, I think.
Yeah.
Junior high? Okay, she says junior high, but I remember. And it was a tiny little screen, and we all gathered around my aunt's house. About 10, yeah. 15, nobody could see anything. It was a tiny screen.
Right.
It was maybe the size of the computer, you know, an 18-inch computer or 16, something like that. That was the big TV at that time.
I know, it's changed so much. What do you think is probably, I mean, because you've grown up and have experienced and have lived through so many of the different, you know, just huge changes. I mean, I don't think changes, because I think back when, you know, because I have a sister who's 15 years younger than me, and I think about when she was born compared to, you know, me being born in the mid-70s. And I'm thinking, you know, even my generation, at least we still have some huge, you know, changes with technology that have happened, where I think it's definitely slowed down, you know, since my sister's been born, and, well, my kids aren't even seeing the changes like I did. But, I mean, you really have gone through
a lot of... I think that every generation does that, too, because my, you know, parents and grandparents, you know, phones were just beginning. I mean... I remember phones were just beginning with us, too. We all had party lines. And, you know, there was different times you could talk. And, you know, I mean, it was such a different world. And I think that because of technology, every generation goes through that. And I remember my parents' generation, all they did was talk about the war. And I said, oh, they're so old-fashioned. You know, every generation had their... But I think my generation did... experience a lot of changes.
Yeah, I really think you guys did, and you know, and I'm blessed, you know, to have parents that grew up during your guys' generation, and you know, they've shared a lot of that. But you know, I look at, you know, like my generation who's having kids, and of course, I'm my sister. She just recently had a child, so you know, her generation, you know, is having kids, and I sort of think about that going, you know, the values that my parents had, like, you know, from your guys' generation had, and even my grandparents' generation, I look at the way my generation is and the ones, that are falling behind me, and I sit and think, are we really instilling a lot of, sometimes I wonder if it's true when I hear, you know, we have become such a materialistic world, and have we lost sight of some of the values that you guys really honestly fought for? I mean, the civil rights. And sometimes I think we take a lot of what you guys, you know, really went through for granted. Do you see that? I mean, is there something you would like, you know, those that are following in your guys' footsteps to open our eyes up more to that we're not? Because I sometimes I think we'll walk in, and my son says that, well, he's actually in debate. He does policy. And he says, you know, if high school students, because he's a senior, he's a junior this year, so he'll be a senior next year. He's like, if high school students would just take their eyes off their dang iPhones and take the earbuds out for a second. He goes, there's so much that they're missing out on. And the only reason he even realizes this is because he's in debate. And so he has to be aware of what's happening around when he, because, I mean, he does extemp, which is, for those who don't know what that is, it's when they go in for debate, they get a topic. They don't even know what the topic is until they show up at the debate, and they have literally, I think, like 5 minutes to write a whole essay, you know, speech on it, and then go in and present it. And so he has to be very up to date what's happening around, not just in the U.S., but around the world, because he doesn't know what they're going to throw at him. And so I'm grateful that he did debate for that reason, but it made me realize, oh my gosh, you know, am I, you know, even as a parent, am I not making sure my kids are more self-aware? So is there something that you wish that we would be, you know, open our eyes up to more that we're not, that we're missing?
History, just understanding the history. Somebody close to me is a doctor, and I was trying to tell her once about the history that came out from my generation for her to have the opportunity. Well, half or more of her class was medical school class was women. She had no, and she wasn't interested really. So it really, that there's no history there. There's no understanding. Basically, you know, those that are in it now, it would be nice. And that's one of the reasons, you know, this book, I feel, for my family anyway, has been very good, seeing the whole history there.
Yeah, and you do, you really do get into that, you know, and even though it is more from your, from your perception, I mean, you do incorporate how other people during that time were also perceiving things as well, and why they stood on one side and maybe you on the other, and I valued that so much, because you didn't just keep like, well, this is just, you know, my how I was, and this is how you should all be thinking or how you should be viewing. I mean, you did a very good job about, you know, okay, this is where I was, this is what was happening to me. However, this is a lot of the reason why this was happening, because some people felt this way and some people felt this way. I mean, you were very good about, you know, letting people understand that even though this is where you were at and this is what was going on, you know, you were very good about showing a lot of the dynamics that were happening, which is so hard to do in many regards, to try and understand other people, where their perspectives were and where they were coming from or why maybe they were doing what they were doing. I mean, even in the first few chapters of your book, when you're getting into, you know, sharing some of the past and laying the groundwork of where the book was going, I was, you know, your writing was very much like, well, you know, this is how this person was, and this was because of this, and you were very good about, you know, giving some of that background to help us understand and to feel and feel like we're there with you and what it was like being there during those, you know, those different times, those different places. You're welcome. And I think it's so sad because, and going back to actually when Jack was here, because my husband was talking a lot, because his parents were very much held on to the 50s values and viewpoints. And so he had a lot of fun talking with Jack and talking about your memoir as well, because, you know, he never really understood the whole Ashbury and hippie, you know. He's a huge history buff, but, you know, talking to someone who actually lived it was really fun. And to be able to discuss your memoir with Jack Remick, and because Jack lived it through it as well as you did, and to kind of discuss it, because since Jack had read your memoir, and it really helped my husband understand the other side of the fence even better, And one of the comments that Jack said was, and it's so sad because you now have to read memoirs like yours, you know, Torch in the Dark, to really understand it, because history books nowadays for kids don't even embrace a lot of that information anymore, or that emotion or the passion that was from that, you know, era. And it's so sad. So I think you're right. I think we do need to read more memoirs like yours and history books beyond what we learn in school, because I don't think we have the understanding that we need to of the past. Understand that's where we're at now. No, I think it's great. What
you know, I was very lucky that I was born in the time that I was, because I had a lot of mental problems from my childhood traumas. And because of the looseness of the 60s and the support that I got and had alternative, I've always been on an alternative path. I don't know how I got into it originally, but certainly because of that path, I could get through, and I'm well now. I have a full life. And had it been any other time, there's no question I probably would have spent most of my life in a mental hospital or so drugged up. So I you know, I'm grateful for it, but that time really fostered that kind of healing that was wonderful, that, you know, made it possible for me. I also wanted to say about Jack, you know, I was in his class for a year, and just learning craft and learning how to put this together, and he right in the beginning, I couldn't do it. I didn't know what he was doing, and he'd get a centerpiece. He said, get something. And he used the word shattered for my work from the little bit that I had shown him, you know, that we did exercises in class with. He did it with Bob Ray, and he put shattered there, and I've used that throughout the whole writing of the book. And just learning the craft and learning from people that were, Jack is so dedicated to working with people. Besides, he's a novelist and has written his own 4 wonderful books.
Yeah, you're right. He
really is good to have someone or several people, you know, that can support you.
Yeah.
I'm convinced you really can't do these things alone. You really need support. And then several of us, 3 of us, 4 of us, I've met for 9 years straight. We kept meeting from after that class and helped put together. Everybody has a memoir now.
Wow, that's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I garnered a lot from your book, too, is looking inside, you know, is being able to look deep within inside yourself and to find empowerment from within. In writing your memoir, I would think that you would have, you know, one, I mean, you obviously did that, which is why, you know, you've reached where you are. But to just go back and go into those, you know, dark memories and positive memories. I mean, it's you always have both in a memoir, good and bad. I think that takes a lot of, you know, self-reflection yet again and a lot of, you know, empowerment to be able to do that, because it's not easy to drudge back through, like, past pains at all. It was bad.
But that's why I couldn't have done it alone. I've always been in groups, support groups, for writing, and the 3 of us met for 9 years, almost once a week, and we gave each other support and made it possible. And we would sit there and write for a half hour, 45 minutes, and we would all be writing about our past. So it was very supportive. It made it possible.
Yeah. No,
I could have not done that on my own. That's who I am as a writer. I can't really do it on my own. It's too hard. Those memories, but once I was there, and then it became alive. My whole life became alive, so it was important for me.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I mean, it seems like it'd be a very therapeutic, you know, scenario. I mean, even if someone doesn't want to publish, you know, publish their journal, I'll just call it a journal, you know, not turn it into an actual published memoir. I mean, do you think that's something that everybody, I mean, because I've kicked this, you know, this around myself, you know, writing about some of the things that have happened in my past that have been horrible. And, you know, I find writing, because I write fiction, I find that very therapeutic anyways. But, you know, I just wonder if this is a process that a lot of people who have a lot of, you know, pain and you know, hurtful memories, that maybe this is a process that, you know, everybody should at least do, even if it's just for themselves. Because it seems very therapeutic. I mean, you seem like you've, you faced the demons, you know, you had to face them when you were there living it. You've gone back and you've written your memoir and had to reface them again. And it just seems like it's helped. You seem very centered. You seem very, very at peace in a lot of ways. So I'm just curious, I mean, would you say this is something that, you know, even if they don't seek publication, it's a journey a lot of people should maybe take if they feel like they're just really in a place, in a dark place, to help them move through?
I don't know if you have to be in a dark place, but if you can write or want to write, yes, it makes a huge difference. It really did heal me. It was the final thing. I mean, I've had a lot of work. I did a lot of work on myself. But having mm-hmm. this book out and actually then doing readings and people acknowledging it really did, it healed me from all the early traumas. But yes, even just writing it can be a big help.
Yeah.
And seeing in perspective, you know, I'm in my 70s now. I'm a very different person, very different time.
Yeah. Is there any time when you're writing your memoir you're worried about putting something in there? I mean, for fear of, you know, your son, you know, maybe it's something he was unaware of.
I had asked his approval because it's a lot about, you know, our relationship and him, his birth, and he's prominent in the community. He's a state legislator in Washington mm-hmm. here, and he wanted it. He said, fine. So I wanted to put it out anyway, but you know, it's an old story. When I lived in Brooklyn, a very well-known author wrote about a very distressing thing, and she was known, I mean, she's known nationally, and I saw her on the street, and I said, how could you have written that? And she said, I had to. She said, I just had to. And you know, nobody died, nobody was, I mean, you know, she has children that people talk, and then, you know, believe me. And
yeah,
it's a beautiful book. It actually is a very beautiful
book. And that's the thing. I mean, most people, when they read memoirs, I know, even myself, like I said, you know, I've kicked around the idea of, you know, even if I never publish it, just writing my own journal for my kids later on when I'm gone for them to get, because I'm just thinking,
for your family, like, just when, yes, and that's a big thing now that I'm older. You want to have some legacy. You know, like, I would like to know my grandmother's story. I mean, I knew things she told me, but to have it really on paper makes a huge difference. And just the history that time. My grandmother came from Russia. She worked in the, you know, factories. I'd like to know what it was like for her on a daily basis.
Yeah, she was in Russia in a very hard time. Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
That would definitely be an interesting story to have read.
But there's nothing,
wow.
There's no trace at all. So, yes, I think anything people put down, any written word, is great, you know, for the future generations, for them, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Well, is there anything you would like listeners to know, Hadiya, before we wrap up the show for today?
Just to keep writing, you know. There's a lot of voices that come in and say, don't, can't, just to keep writing, because you do. It is very healing. It feels good.
That's good. And is there like a website where people can learn more about you, about your book, where they can follow you if they're out in the out in the state of Washington, where they can, if they're in close proximity, find out about any of the different, you know, times that you go out to do readings?
Have a website, torchinthedark.com, Torch in the Dark, and that's the name of the book. And there is a website.
That's great. And then just so our listeners know, too, Hadiya is also doing a mini tour here with the World of Ink Network. So we do have her author photo up where it says Authors on Tour, and you can click there. And I think we have an excerpt of your book there, and I know we have the bio links to your book there, the book covers there, your bio's there, and then, of course, the different places that you'll be having book reviews and interviews. On different blogs is posted up as well, the schedule, so you can always check that out. Well, it's been great talking to you. You're very inspirational. Your book is just, I think it should be a must read for anybody, just because it talks about just so many things. I mean, not just about welding, but like you said, you know, about the 60s and being a single mother and just, you know, what was happening during that time and, you know, how you persevered through it all and You know, and I think that's always inspirational anyways, to realize, you know, somebody else can do it, I can do it too. Because yeah, that seems to, at least with my son, I look at his generation, they have the whole emo kids going, you know, and they all just seem like they don't know what to do with themselves. I'm just kind of thinking, there's so many people you could look to for inspiration and to, you know, to be a, you know, help motivate you and a mentor in your life, and even if it's just reading their memoir or whatever. And it's, I just, you know, I applaud you for sharing your book with us and your life with us for that reason, because, you know, I think people are looking for, you know, someone that they can relate to and be inspired from and take courage from to push through their own, you know, troubles and times and dark times in their lives. So thank you so much for having the courage to do that, to share what you've went through with the world anyways, because I know very many people have stories like yours, but they just don't have the courage to share it publicly. So I applaud you for that.
So I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, you take care, and it was great having you on the show, and we do wish you much success with your book, and we hope that you'll consider to keep on writing, and, you know, even if it's not another memoir, maybe you'll write something in fiction or some nonfiction. Sounds like you have a lot of different things that you can write about. Have you thought about a future book?
Yeah, I've been working on some things about my granddaughter and grandchildren. Yeah, I've been working on some things and being older.
Well, you're a wonderful writer. I loved your writing. It has a rhythm. It's not trying to write to what's in trend, and that's what I loved about your memoir as well. It has its own rhythm, its own voice. So I wish you much success with writing and in your future books as well. Well, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
And then just so our listeners know again, tomorrow is A Good Story is a Good Story with Marcia Casper Cook. And that was at, I have to look again, 3 p.m. Eastern time. And then Wednesday is our once-a-month show with R. Jeffries, The Right Step. I think that's at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. And then, again, right now it doesn't look like book discussion with Fran Lewis is going to be happening this week, but that may change in the next couple of days. So just, you can always go to the World of Ink Network. .com to find out what shows we have going on, and of course to see who our authors on tour are, like Hadia Carlisle. And we thank you all for listening. Have a great day. Bye-bye.